this sermon a little bit today is just to start asking questions around my life. But I'm sure, having heard that from each of them over the last panel or so, there'll be a number of burning questions as well. So we've got a loose framework for the discussion. We want to explore how did we get here, what are the impacts for corporate Australia in the immediate post-commission era, and perhaps that's a little point of positivity, what does the future look like? But if at any point people have got questions, please throw their hand up and offer them up to the panel. But Paul, I might start with you. You spoke a fair bit about the concept of trust and some of the things that happen in your organisation. But can I ask you to start with your some reflections on, from your perspective, what do you think went wrong in terms of the matters that went down by the commission? Very, very difficult to observe what happened for others. I'd love to remind people that it was a Royal Commission into misconduct and behaviour by Modern Community Standards and Expectations. So if you go looking for that, you will have what you've got. So I think the terms of reference were very clear, and on the 15th of December, when we started taking the final open, we were asked to provide a record of everything that we thought we had done. Each organisation was asked to do that. And then I think that the Commission, very methodically and informed by the regulators, like APRA, ASIC, Choice, and others, basically brought to bear all of the things that had been concerning over time. So if we set out to discover misconduct, and because there is plenty, and then you ask people to say what their misconduct was, and then you have the powers to ask people to reveal anything and everything about themselves, and then you give them a whack if they don't give you a full accusation of time, then the combination of those things was, in my mind, inevitable to lead to that car crash. But the one thing I would say about Ross, though, is that most of the very, very poor behaviour that was exposed wasn't really about core banking. It wasn't really about deposits. It wasn't really about mortgages. It was mostly where advice was or where wealth was or other sorts of activities. And why I say that is there was a real commission about banking, but it didn't really reveal a lot about banking. It did reveal a bit about the banks, but not really that much about banking.
As the World Commission identified, you can't stand the charge of their people. So my question is, apart from, trying to force our issues to back on the side of the SAS to a place culturally where we don't need the World Commission to tell us that?
One of the truths about trust that I was trying to convey is that it starts with strategic intent. You have to go every single layer through the organisation. And an idea that I have is that lots and lots of organisations have performance management. I think you could have a trustworthy management process which you ask yourself the question, are we acting in a competent way? Are we acting in a benevolent way? Are we acting in the character and the values and the ethics that we would expect? Now, I know Michelle might be the same of her organisation, but when you're a member organisation and we don't have to deliver a profit for this vehicle, and we're just putting money back into the MSCS repeatedly, and that's through other industry funds, that makes it easier because the only thing you're doing, the only person who can pay the way is another member. So because of that ecosystem and the business model, it's favourably disposed to that. But the second is, I think we'll increasingly have people say, I want to choose to work with a trustworthy organisation and a trusted organisation. That will put a premium on it. You always get what you measure, but you always get what you pay for. So you can't say you want to be a trustworthy organisation on one hand, and you have a ring system that drives untrustworthy behaviours on the other. You can't say, I want to be trusted for this, and you're not investing in it. So I would say the business model and the purpose is important. I'd say what you measure is important, and I'd say organisations get what they pay for.
Michelle, can I ask you to perhaps have some thoughts as well? You spoke about the ease of making decisions when you've got that bright light purpose of justice and that. Do you think there's something in that where the banks went wrong?
think the list can have a little bit of personality, but we feel is that we think that we can support it so much as like the regulatory point of view. And, you know, if I think about, you know, the trip, customer integrity officer, who's going to fly around, and every bank needs a customer integrity officer to make sure that they're doing the right thing, that's the particular customer advocate, that, you know, we think that by imposing more regulatory layers, I think, if I think about, you can give as many compliance techniques as you want, but actually, culture, true culture, is driven from purpose to people. And one of the things that we are consciously alerted to as a member owned organisation, and, you know, we do live that every day, but we're constantly alert to service, and we're constantly alert to what we know and BS. It's got to keep challenging, so we are not perfect. And we were not called before the commission, we were not asked to do the CBA cultural piece. We weren't asked to bring it up, we did it anyway. We did it anyway because we constantly want to demonstrate that we're holding ourselves to the highest standard. I think you can't legislate and regulate for what are essentially cultural issues.
Okay, can I perhaps ask you to say something about the regulations as a program? We're heavily criticized in the final report. Do you think,
I do think the regulators could have been more active. But just on the actual earlier question, I think what we see with organisations is they invest a lot of time in training staff on how to sell, on the technical aspects of the policy, on claims and possibly even claims management. They rarely train them on culture. Really talk to them about that, they really revisit that as part of their principles. Now, I think what we hope to see out of the Royal Commission is that the culture piece really is up front, up the top of the process as part of the training, and culture is the influence of the training, influence of the claims handling, influence of the sale process. So that's my view. Got to look also at the circumstances where there's a lot of funding removed from those organisations over a number of years, and their effectiveness no doubt is being impacted by that.
Fantastic. That's the question, yes.
Yes, this is just an observation of this question. Telling for all of them that they are spending money for national skills, behind it very clear.
I don't think the regulators are asleep.
spent a lot of my time getting into the debate, so I often think that's when you start with the movement. Very different thinking, and I would make two observations. One is that the Royal Commission is conducted by lawyers to provide legal observations and to have courts that treat the conversation in terms of unless the courts are the source and fit the purpose to enforce that. I think that's a question mark for me. Why didn't regulators take into the court? Because every time they had in the past, they lost and then they got to use it and they lost their funding. So you get claims not to do it. The second is that the point that I made before, you get what you pay for. If the people who are regulating look at how people recognise and reward and pay them versus the people that they're regulating. And so where do the resources go? If you're an up-and-coming smart regulator, where is your next meal ticket and where will you get the reward and remuneration and you'll be able to do the best in the way you're doing it? But there has been in some times great experience there. The very brightest minds went through Treasury, for example, or the very brightest minds went through experience in the States. So I think we've got to get to a point where it's a great, proud tradition for a period of time or for your career to work for an important regulator. And so I would just say, I think it will require us to shift how we think about the regulators and how we celebrate the work and how we recognise their work and might have some goals. So I would look at whether the courts help and whether the remuneration and recognition process is helpful.
Fantastic. Thanks, Robert. John, did you want to add anything to the question?
Well, look, I think what Paul said, I think that what the regulator in particular has been attempting to negotiate, mediate, consolidate is in fact quite a productive way of resolving matters. What appears from the Royal Commission is that the banks in particular were not cooperating in providing all of the information that they should have, which may have achieved a different outcome. Certainly nothing that came out of the Royal Commission was a surprise to me, other than the scale of the attendance. I certainly didn't expect that.
I was surprised that organisations didn't tell the regulator the truth. Yeah. Like, that's the one thing that really shocked me. I couldn't believe that big organisations wouldn't tell the full truth to them.
And I think that has impacted on how they go. Going forward, obviously, you're going to be constructively in terms of AFCA, other than super, our process is very much what is fair in all the circumstances beyond AFCA regard, and essentially our decision is binding unless there is a fair faith to apply the circumstances. So nothing is occurred in that space. Superannuation is a little bit different because there's still that right to review the bill. Once we articulate what business that really we need to recognise that it is a fluid topic. So we're not sitting hard words around that we consider fairness, but we'll have principles that say things that should help and part of our reason why we consider it fair, and that's the sort of fill our reason. So I'm hopeful that we can achieve that. Very fortunately, I'm not the project manager of that, so I can go around and deliver promises. I have to deliver the project, and I think I did that certain last week when I said they've got 6 months. So we're hopeful of having something. We do have some eminent people assisting us. There's some professors from Melbourne University. Ian Ramsey is overlooking it. And we will be consulting with him to try to work together.
So, Michelle, you spoke about the increasing cost base within your organisation and your career and how this team is in some really challenging positions. How are you going to manage the tension between constantly wanting to look after the members and to make some of those changes back up with community standards and fairness?
So, I think, look, it's a really great question because actually, when I look at, for example, the 6 months I look at those 6 months and there's kind of two reactions. And then one is, well, for God's sake, I really need to get up, but we're having the ratings out and that's the most that we need to achieve them. But the other part is, well, actually, if that's the lowest common denominator, then how do we make sure that we don't put ourselves in a position where we're subjected to a possible request to hold the result? And we hold the luxurious position of, yes, we worked on normal financial year, but our success is not determined within by 30 June and how much we earn by 30 June. We're an 114-year-old organisation that talks about the next 114 years. So when we think about balancing out those tensions, we don't think about how we're going to do it in the next 3, 6, 12 months. We think about what kind of organisation are we making and what decisions are we making, what frameworks are we building that actually hold us for the next 5, 10, 20 years. I think the last thing
the legacy of the Royal Commission will be that regulators will be better resourced and that's different. There's a lot of other things that might change, but I think that will change any lasting. The second thing is that the government, the APRA, which is the CBA, the Commission, which is up in 35 recommendations. If you received that report and watched the Royal Commission, if you were a director or a senior executive of any organisation in your pricing I think you've been alerted to the new and rising community standards and expectations. So, to answer your question, I think one thing that has changed for a material period of time is the resourcing and the attitude of the regulator. The other is that if there is abuse in the room, what's the thing about exercising care, diligence, and skill in their work?
All agree that Cedric should be excluded by the security. people generation pieces that drove the need for the review don't actually find in customer-owned sectors as it kind of stands. Now, how that plays out in business models is that we are driven holistically towards a sustainability outcome, not a profitability by line outcome. And that's a different thing. When we start to look at RACQ, those banking, insurance, and systems, we look at how we operate as a business model. We don't look at driving profitability in each of those lines of business. We look at that as one single member-based organisation and how we drive sustainability across the whole organisation. So it's a slightly different dynamic, and again, it has a requirement from the patient cabin that sits behind you and makes longer term decisions around how you're driving that. Business model conversation relates to organisation structure, and that's probably more complex than whether there's a right or wrong in terms of holding the whole organisation accountable to being driven by the purpose.
Long-term performance through all cycles. It'll be the lowest fees for that. It'll be help and guidance and service that we'll be doing in the conversation 6 years. Trust me. There'll be a business model that's well fit to that. It'll be true for all sorts of things that people will think about in the sponsor. But I don't think there's an answer to the business model is. But I do think the most important thing is to think about what's the individual looking for, the value, and what will drive. Investors, because we invest $150 million in assets, we always look at that question and say, what's the business model here? How will I make money in the long-term future? Do I trust that people are running this business? Is this the company that is priced to buy us?
Fantastic. Now, I've been given a wrap-up, one last question. well and truly been given.